Well, there is a unique love that God has toward words, his covenantal people, that he does not share with the world at large. This loving kindness, or this chesed, is the expression of God's loyalty to his covenantal people. If you are in Christ this morning, you can experience the warmth of his fellowship and the security of his faithfulness. And my prayer is that you will see that this morning. So please take your copy of God's Word and open to Ruth chapter 2. Ruth chapter 2. I will be reading the whole chapter. This is really part 2 of Ruth chapter 2. So follow along with me. Start in verse 1. Ruth chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. He said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." And Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She's the young Moabite woman who came with Naomi from the country of Moab." She said, "Please, let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they're reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you've comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I'm not one of your servants." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also, pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest.' And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with this young with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Well, just as a quick summary of last week, really this is part two. Part one was verses 1-7, and part two really is verses 8-23. Last week we saw Ruth left Naomi in Bethlehem. Now we didn't know where specifically Naomi was staying until we get to verse 18, because verse 18 notes that they went to the city. They went to the city. And we saw last week that Ruth just happened to stumble across the field of Boaz. Now we know in God's providence and way in which he orchestrates all events, the narrator is just having some fun here. We know who is really behind all that's transpired, don't we? And not only that, but she just happened to stumble upon the field of Boaz's field. But Boaz, behold, there is Boaz. Boaz shows up. Now, the narrator also, which we saw last week, noted that Boaz is from the same clan as Elimelech. So Boaz's connection to Naomi is really through her deceased husband, Elimelech. Both Boaz and Elimelech are from the same tribe, the tribe of Ephrathah of Bethlehem of Judah. And he arrives late morning. We saw his virtue last week. He greeted his workers. He said, "Lord be with you." And they said, "The Lord bless you." And then Boaz asks this question. He says, "Whose young woman is this?" And we're going to find out this morning why he asked that question. Now, his foreman informed him that there's a young Moabite woman, a foreigner, who had made a very brash and bold request. She asked to follow behind the male reapers during harvest. She asked to leave the corner of the field, which the Mosaic law and legislation did not specifically permit her to do. And now we're asking this question: what's this righteous man going to do? Well, we're going to see that this morning. Point number one, I want to look at the reason for kindness. The reason for kindness. Boaz has actually been informed, and I know you see this in the text, Boaz has been informed by someone else of the commitment that Ruth has displayed to Naomi. Now, look at verse 11. Look at what Boaz says to her. "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me." Do you see that? "And how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to people that you did not know, before me." Now, we don't know who informed him. We don't really know what all that has transpired means. Who did Naomi talk to? How did they know? All we know is that Boaz was informed prior to coming to his field. And now I just have a question. Does verse 11 shed any light into why Boaz came into his field? Is that why he inquired of the young foreman, "Whose young woman is this?" Maybe he's trying to piece together what he's heard. Now, Ruth's favor here, in some degree, is tied to her own virtue, her own uprightness. But it's very important that you listen to this. However, her favor is not completely the result of it. Boaz recognizes and hears of her virtue that she has. Yet, he's going to display so much generosity on her. So do not leave this morning thinking all that she's receiving, she's earned. Oh, no, friend. That's not the case. What she's going to receive, which we'll see in the future, was not the result of her own virtue, but because of Boaz's generosity. Boaz here in verse 8 is very emphatic, which really means he's telling Ruth, look, don't go to another field. Stay on this field. Don't go on that field. Stay on this field and follow behind my women. Now, if all Boaz did was demand that Ruth stay on his field after what he supposedly had heard, then we can see this as being a bit harsh and brash, can we not? But in reality, we're asking this question. Boaz is a worthy man. How is this thing going to be worked out? What does it look like for a worthy and a righteous and upright man? What does that look like in terms of how he treats others? Well, friend, this is going to be spelled out for us. And he refers to Ruth as what in verse 8? My daughter. Do you see that? We've seen that, haven't we already? Naomi several times has referred to Ruth as my daughter. And now Boaz refers to Ruth as my daughter. What's this about? Well, it's twofold. First, Boaz really is removing in large degrees the ethnic, the social, and the customary barriers that existed between an Israelite and a Moabite. That's first. Second, Boaz was considerably older than Ruth as well. And notice how he says, my daughter. It's a platonic word. So Boaz here is going to show favor to Ruth. And there's really three legs to this stool here. The first is this. Boaz is showing favor to Ruth because of his own virtue. Boaz is going to show Ruth because God has prepared his heart. And third, Boaz is going to give Ruth favor because of her own virtue as well. His virtue, her virtue, and God preparing both of their hearts. Now, he mentions something that's very, very important here in verse 11, and I want you to look at it. Notice what he says in verse 11. He says, everything has been fully told to me, how you left your father and mother. Put that in the back of your mind. How you left your father and mother and how you're going to a native land. Do you see that? Father and mother and native land. If you know your Old Testament, which many of you do, you know that this is an allusion both to marriage and future progeny, isn't it? Do you remember in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, that's the famous marriage passage, isn't it? A man will leave his what? Father and mother and cling to his wife. Why is Boaz using marriage covenant language here in this text? Oh, but we're not done. Not only that, but notice that he says how you left your native land. Do you remember what the Lord told Abram in what the Lord commanded Abram to do in Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3? What did he say? He says, leave your land. And so the narrator here is trying to connect the marriage covenant of forsaking, of leaving father and mother, along with the promise given to Abraham. Do you see it? And I will show you. But not only that, there's also an allusion to Jacob's desire and Jacob's both wives of leaving the land as well. So what you have here in verse 11, friend, is that the narrator is giving you an allusion both to marriage and to future progeny. And I have a question. How's this thing going to get played out? And we're going to see this. Point number two, I want to look at the reception of kindness, the reception of kindness. Now, there are really five outlets here, five categories, five items of how Boaz has shown favor to Ruth. Now, Ruth, just as a heads up, doesn't expect anything. You understand that, right? She doesn't demand anything. She wants to work, but she's a bit bold in her request. Boaz here is going to lavish magnanimous favor and loving kindness on Ruth, and I want to show you it. First, he invited Ruth to stay with his female workers. I want you to look at this, please, in verse 8. He says, "Listen, my daughter, don't go to another field, but keep close to my young women." Do you see? My young women. These female workers would have followed behind the male reapers. So as the reapers would grab a grain in one hand and cut it with the next, the men would leave behind bundles of grain, and women would follow behind the men and gather them into bundles for it to be then to be transported. And so here we see Boaz giving Ruth the right to stick behind his workers. Do you see that? Not next to them, but behind them. This word here, stick or keep close in verse 8, it's the same Hebrew word that is used in verse 14 of chapter 1 regarding Ruth clinging to Naomi. This is important, friend, very, very important, because Boaz is slowly changing Ruth's status. Do you see that? Ruth's geographical location and her social status is changing. See, at this time, if foreigners or sojourners or widows or aliens, as they were gleaning the corners of the field, if they went into restricted areas on the field, you know what would happen? They'd be kicked out. They'd be removed. They wouldn't be allowed to glean. There was a certain area. Ruth here gets VIP status. That's what she gets. I wonder what other foreigners were thinking of Ruth her first day, just being invited to follow behind these women, these workers. Now, two things about my women. They were either hired day laborers, or they may have even been women from the same tribe as him. Doesn't matter. All you need to know is that she receives special treatment. This is unheard of. This is radical. This is preferential treatment despite her. You understand? Her worthiness has not won this. Boaz's generosity has granted it to her. Second, he commanded his male servants not to harass her. Now, this is in verse 9 and in verse 15. Now, Boaz may have actually issued this command two separate times, first in verse 9 and second in verse 15, once before mealtime and then after mealtime. Now, this harassment here refers both to verbal harassment and physical harassment. Now, I mentioned last week that at the end of verse 7, in the Hebrew, a hut is mentioned, or a dwelling place is mentioned. Now, some commentators may believe that there could have been a temporary hut or makeshift shelter that was designed for workers to take refuge in the heat of the day. And in this makeshift shelter, there would have been shade there, and there would have also been water there. Now, the question is this: why is Ruth taking a break in this makeshift shelter? It's very simple. It's because of what the men did to her. She's not taking a break because she's tired. She's taking a break because she was assaulted in some way as she was gleaning on the outer perimeters. At this point, prior to Boaz's arrival, she didn't follow behind the reapers. She was still in the corner of the field. And it seems as though the men said something or did something, and so she's taking a break. Boaz commanded his men, "Don't you hoot at her. Don't you holler at her. Don't you whistle at her. And don't you even think about touching her. She's off limits." And keep in mind, the story is told during the time of when? Judges, where every man did what was evil in his own eyes, except Boaz. There is a righteous man in Bethlehem. Third, he publicly authorized her to drink from the same jars as the men. I almost fell off my chair this week. Okay. In the morning, okay, women would draw water for men. Or male workers would draw water for male workers. There was no crossing in this culture. Okay? Now, this is so bold. Boaz has given Ruth the right in verse 9 to go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. This is off limits for everyone else, with the exception of the men. Guess what? Boaz is again making a special distinction. This is more radical than John chapter 4's, Jesus' account of the woman at the well, the Samaritan. Remember that story? The Samaritan was a half-breed as a woman who would draw for a man. Okay? But this is different. Why? Because Jewish men are drawing for who? A Moabite woman. Again, this is absolutely unheard of. No other foreigner had the same favor as Ruth. But we're not done. Fourth, Boaz invites Ruth to eat with him. Oh my. To share his bread and for her to dip the grain in his special sauce. Now, we don't know if Ruth brought her lunch bag with her. We don't know any of that. That doesn't matter. And if she did bring her lunch bag, what was about to happen, she never would have dreamed would have happened. Boaz is already eating. And this is in verse 14. I want you to picture it. Ruth is somewhere on the inner circle. She's not outside. She's not in the outer perimeters, but she's somewhere on the inside of the field. We don't know what she's doing. She might be. We don't know. But in verse 14, it says, "At mealtime, Boaz said to her." That means that she was within some type of earshot. She about fell over. Boaz says, "Come here. Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." Your translation may say vinegar. It could be vinegar. It could be wine. It could be special sauce. No one gave the ingredients here. All we know is that this is very special here. This is a very special time. Why? Because she shouldn't be there. She's a foreigner. She's a Moabite. You know what? He not only has her to sit down. Now notice the location of where she's sitting. She sat behind who? She sat next to who? The reapers. She didn't sit next to Boaz. At least not yet. So she sat next to the reapers. And you know what? Boaz is just passing his lunch, his grain all around, even to her. And he says, here, dip this bread, dip this grain in this sauce. I wonder what the other reapers were thinking. Do you know what? Mealtime, and some of you have this philosophy as well. Mealtime in a home, especially at this time, it's not just to feed hungry people. Mealtime during this culture was a place of belonging, of fellowship, of encouragement, and of celebration. And Ruth being invited in, it was Boaz's token of gracious hospitality. And last, Boaz commanded his workers to leave behind grain on the stalks. Oh my. He charged his female workers to intentionally remove stalks from the grain and accidentally leave it behind for her. This is special treatment given only to Ruth and no one else. As a matter of fact, the Mosaic law, those of you who are blue-collar workers, you may not appreciate this, but at this time in the Mosaic law, if you worked on a field or you worked on a job site and you finished and you left your tools behind, guess who it belonged to? The poor. I'm sure they learned real quick to clean up afterwards, wouldn't they? But the same is true as well with grain. If grain was left behind once the job site was cleared, then those who were on the outer fringes were then allowed to come in, but only after the reaping and the harvesting. Ruth here gets VIP treatment despite her. Now, this actually reminded me of a once-in-a-lifetime experience I had about 10 years ago. It was while I was teaching at Atlanta Christian School in South Jersey. There was an international Chinese student who had been there for about 4 years, and freshman through senior. And at the end of, towards the end of the senior year, she invited all of her teachers out to a restaurant, and it was a restaurant, Ruth Chris. Now, I'd never heard of Ruth Chris before ever, and it makes sense. And the reason it made sense is because when I got there and I opened up the menu, it made a lot of sense on why I was never there. So I sat down and I noticed something very strange. The senior, she always had at least two waiters or waitresses next to her, standing next to her. I didn't know what was going on, so I dismissed it. And I didn't think anything of it. And I opened up the menu and I committed myself. The only thing I can afford here is a crouton. And so that was about it. And so the waiters and waitresses went around. It was a large table and they said, well, you know, what would you like? And it finally got to me and I just couldn't make up my mind. The whole table was waiting for me. And this student said to me, she says, Mr. Laskow, get whatever you want. Whatever I want. And I never struggled so much with the English vocabulary before as I did that evening. Does whatever really mean whatever? Or does whatever mean within a certain amount? And the table was still waiting for me. Until my friend, another teacher who was sitting next to me, he leaned in and he said, you know, her father owns this restaurant, don't you? Waitress! So I said, what's the largest lobster you have? So she went in the back. She said, we have a 5-pound lobster. And I said, is it alive? She said, yes, it's alive. I said, okay, well, I'll have it steam. Well, 40 minutes later, she comes out with this dinosaur-looking red thing. I mean, if this thing was alive, it would have eaten me, okay? But I also ordered a steak. Their most expensive steak. You know why? Because she said, get whatever you want. Not only that, but I also ordered two of their largest broiled lobster tails to go for my wife. And I knew my wife doesn't like lobster. So, that night, I went from crouton to crustacean. So what's the point? The point is this. I was invited out for mealtime, not because of my worthiness necessarily as a teacher, but because of her generosity. I deserved none of the whatevers. But she said, take whatever, get whatever you want. I did not reserve back to, well, I'll just get a salad then. Oh, no. I wanted to honor her generosity. So I ordered it. Just so we're clear, if any of you take me out to eat, that will not happen unless you say, get whatever you want. Ruth, as Ruth received this special invitation to follow behind the women, she didn't say, well, you know what, I just feel bad. I'm just going to go back to the corner of the edges. Oh, no. She honored Boaz's generosity. She took him at face value in his generosity. Point number three, I want to look at the response of kindness. This is in verses 10 and verse 13. Now, Ruth's concern is displayed actually by the narrator in verse 10 and in verse 13. I hope you see this. Twice she noted, Ruth noted, that she has found favor. Do you see that? Look at verse 10. She fell on her face. She says, why have I found favor in your eyes? And then verse 13, she says, I have found favor in your eyes. Do you see that? She asks the question, why have I found favor? Now, so, oh, wow, I am experiencing your favor. Now, in verse 13, it's really in the present tense. So she means, I am finding favor currently, presently, before you. And what do we learn about Ruth? Well, it says here in verse 13, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant. Do you see that? You know what we learned about Ruth? Ruth had her own struggles and doubts, didn't she? Do you see that? Look again at verse 13. I found favor in your eyes, my Lord. For, do you see the for? That's the reason why. For you've comforted me. Do you see that? You've allowed me to breathe a sigh of relief. And so what do we learn? Well, that morning, both Ruth and Naomi had their own baggage, didn't they? They had their own things that both of them had to deal with. But what's the difference? Naomi sat in self-pity while Ruth took a step of faith, walked in obedience, and God honored her. Now, notice what she did here in verse 10. She fell on her face, she bowed to the ground, and I want us to look at the end of verse 13 because this is important. So, Ruth in response fell on her face, she bowed to the ground, and then look at the end of verse 13. She says, though I'm not one of your servants. Now, this is very important, and this is why. Because Abigail did the same thing before David. In 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 23, Abigail did the same thing before David. She fell on her face, she bowed, and also the same Hebrew word is used as well at the end of verse 13. So when you combine verse 10 and verse 13, both Ruth and Abigail fall prostrate before a virtuous man, and you know what? Abigail later marries David. Question. Will Ruth do the same? Now, Boaz does something that's shocking. And it's in verse 12. The Lord repay you. Do you see that? The Lord repay you for what you've done. We're not done. And a full reward be given to you, who? I want you to notice by who. Look at his benediction. Look at his blessings. By who? The Lord, Yahweh, the God of who? Israel. Do you see that? Boaz not only is giving a blessing to Ruth, but listen, he's going to be that blessing. It is one thing to talk about blessing others, but it's another thing to meet that, isn't it? It's one thing to talk about it verbally, but it's another to put out and to meet them where they are. Boaz is not just the spokesman of God's covenantal mercy. He is the embodiment of it, right? He is the agent of it. Why? Because it's actually under his wings who Ruth is going to take refuge in. Do you see that? Look at the end of verse 12. Under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Now, Boaz is not rejoicing in his ability to meet her need. Now, this is something that we do very well. And there can be an element of pride to it. Okay? There's oftentimes an inner sense of pride that wells up, not a rejoicing that we can bless others, but a pride that wells up because blessing someone was the vehicle for us to rejoice in our generosity. It's very distinct. The man or woman of God who is being used rejoices that at their expense they can bless others. And this is something that only the Spirit of God places within a man or a woman. It's the kind of man or the kind of woman who says, if I have to be spent for your well-being, I will do it and rejoice. The wings of God here is a picture of a mother bird that protects a young that maybe has fallen out of a nest. So Boaz is saying, I'm like a mother bird here, and I'm spreading my wings and I'm going to protect you. I will provide for you. And the reason why it's important that we looked at Boaz referring this blessing to the Lord, all caps Yahweh in verse 12, and the God of Israel is this. It's because Ruth now is part of the covenantal people, isn't she? She's demonstrated that in chapter 1, verses 15 and 16 in leaving her in leaving Moab and now to using Yahweh, your God. Your God will be my God. I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me. And also, if anything but death parts me from you. Ruth is part of the covenantal people of God in faith. And now, as a result, Boaz is able to use and take advantage of God's covenantal blessing. Now, this is where it really gets people mixed up in terms of his prayer, his benediction in verse 12. The Lord repay you for what you have done. He wants God to compensate Ruth for her faith. Is that a prayer that we should be asking? Is it wrong to ask God to reward someone's faith? The answer is no. Scripture attests multiple times to God rewarding virtue and righteous living. Did you know that God's compensation and his reward is actually tied to his character? Isn't it? Because God is just, he must punish the wicked and he must reward who? The righteous. But we get mixed up when we confuse God's judicious, declaratory, and forensic righteousness with the practical outpouring of it. She's already been renewed, hasn't she? She's already part of the covenantal people. And Boaz is saying, may God repay you back. Not save you because of your good works. But since you've already been renewed, may the Lord bless you. Friend, have you ever prayed that for someone else? Has your prayer been perhaps a son or a daughter, a mother or father, a brother or sister, even here, someone in your life is walking with the Lord? And your prayer is, God, will you reward them in some way in their faithfulness? Again, this is tied to the character of God. Lord, bless them. Friend, if that is your prayer, there is nothing wrong with that. Proverbs says, disaster pursues sinners, but the righteous are rewarded for their good. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 12 notes, he will repay everyone according to what they have done. In the last chapter in Philippians chapter 4, verses 15 through 19, Paul is rejoicing in the generosity of the saints at Philippi in the multiple sending of gifts to the poor saints in Jerusalem, both during persecution and during famine, and even in providing with Paul financial support. I mean, Paul is just overflowing with generosity. And you know what he says to them? He says, you have trusted God. May God supply you richly with all of your needs. The story is told of a mother who took her daughter into a candy store in the middle of town. And as the mother and daughter walked in, the owner of the candy shop saw this little girl and thought she was the cutest little thing. You know why? Because that mother's daughter reminded him of her daughter. And so when he saw her, he got out from behind the counter. He grabbed a plastic bag. He got down on both knees and he said, sweetheart, you remind me of my daughter. And he opened up the bag and he said, whatever you'd like, just point to it. We'll walk over and you can take a handful of your favorite candy, place it in the bag, and it'll be yours for free. So the girl pointed to it. He opened up the bag. She reached her little hands over, grabbed the candy and said thank you and left. Well, this happened a couple times until the next week she came back. Except this time, the little girl took the bag from the owner. She pointed to her favorite candy spot, and she opened up the bag. He took his hands, put it in the bag, closed it, and walked out. And as they were leaving, mother looked down at the daughter, and she said, what was that about? And the daughter looked up to her mother and she said, that man's hands are bigger. God's hands are bigger. He will supply all of your needs as you trust him. Boaz wants to reward Ruth for her virtue. Now, this future reward is very important. It's not just present reward, but future reward. Now, there's an interplay here that the narrator uses in light of language in Genesis. This is an allusion first to Abraham. Now, pay very close attention. In Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 6, you remember the Lord told Abram, fear not, Abram. I'm your shield. Your reward will be great. And then he said, look to the what? Stars. See if you can count them. That will be your reward. Also, we can think of Jacob. Jacob wanted who? Rachel. Why? Because she had nice eyes. Laban asked Jacob what his reward should be. He said, give me Rachel. Laban outsmarted him, gave her Leah, so now he's got to work twice as much. But the whole point is this. He wanted Rachel. Here's my question. Will Ruth's future be marriage and a child? Yes. The Lord is going to reward Ruth. You know, Ruth's faith is actually greater than Abraham's. You realize that, right? Both of them were pagans. Abram from Ur, Ruth from Moab. Do you know what? Both of them left their father and their mother, didn't they? But you know what the difference between them is? Abram was promised land, seed, blessing. Ruth was promised none of it. Ruth still walked in faith, and God rewarded her. Fourth is the reward of kindness. Now, she departs from Boaz's field with between 40 to 60 pounds of barley. Ruth would have beaten the barley on the ground to get the kernels. And ancient food rationing would be about 1 liter per person per day. So Ruth has collected in this one day to feed her for well over a week and a half. This one day. Now, some of you are asking, well, how could she have done that? She's just a little girl. You don't know that. How long did she walk? It doesn't matter. Where was the home that she was staying in? It doesn't matter. All I'm thinking of is this Moabite woman hauling 50 pounds of grain on her back. Now, she has collected all of this, friend, and this is the main point of the message. All this was collected not because of her industry, but because of Boaz's generosity. She would not have had all of this without the generosity of Boaz. And I love this in verse 10 and verse 13. I'm finding favor. I have found favor. Have you ever found yourself asking that question? I found favor before you. Have you ever found yourself asking that question in light of not only where you've been in the past, but where you are right now spiritually? I'm finding favor before you, and I don't deserve it. Do you ever find yourself asking that question? Do you ever find yourself throughout the day asking this question, Lord, who am I that you would die for me? All my sins, all my baggage, all my shortcomings, that I have found favor before you. And the more I grow in my understanding of your holiness and your perfection and the sin that you saved me from and the sin that you're saving me from, oh God, who am I? And that man or that woman soon realizes that God is gracious and he is compassionate to sinners. That is the God that we serve. Oh, that the Lord would invite us in the future to break bread with him at his table. Not only that, but he's going to serve us. Me. You've invited me, a foreigner, a dead, stinking, stenching man, far removed from you. And you crossed this infinite chasm to pay for my sin. Friend, the gospel does not leave us dry and dead. The gospel energizes us with gratitude and with thanksgiving. And in that thanksgiving, we now walk and we live in gratitude and in faith because of that. And if you're here this morning and you're looking around and you're saying, well, I've heard this 1,000 times. You don't realize and understand how wicked you were in the past and even the sin that you have right now. The fact that God's mighty hand upholds you and he keeps you and you will not be lost must lead us to a broken and a contrite heart that God will not despise. You are secure in his arms because his arms are strong and not ours. A bruised reed he will not break. A flickering wick he will not snuff out. In our poverty we are full. And in faith we've gone from rags to riches. Now when Naomi sees Ruth, she's amazed. She says, where in the world did you get all that from? Now Ruth is unaware of Boaz's relation and connection to the family, but Naomi lets her know in verse 20. She said, may he be blessed. He is not forsaken. That man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. Do you see that? Now, this is very important, okay? This is not a Cinderella story. I want to show you why. Look at verse 23. She kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning into the end of the barley and wheat harvest. How long is that? That's 7 to 8 weeks. So if Ruth is collecting 50 pounds of grain each day, by the conclusion of both of these harvests, she would have had 2,500 pounds of grain. Don't ask me what she's doing with it. I don't know. I'm just telling you how much she would have. Now, notice how the narrator ends this chapter. This is very important. She lived with her mother-in-law. How long? 7 weeks. This is not a Cinderella story. This is not that god-awful Hallmark movies that some of your wives force you to watch, right? May the Lord have mercy on all of us, right? The narrator notes, yes. She's walking out now, right? The narrator notes, and she's living with her mother-in-law. And I'm saying, Boaz, go ahead and ask her out, man. Just go ahead, pull the trigger. Ask her out. It's been 7 weeks. And his response is, well, there's a closer redeemer. She's a Moabite. So what's going to happen? Well, the Lord is going to continue to do what he does and move the chess pieces on his divine chessboard, and he's going to place everyone where they should be at the proper time. And really, the embodiment of love and kindness, friend, I hope you see, is not Boaz. He's just a shadow. It's of the Lord Jesus Christ. He is the embodiment of chesed, of loving kindness. Now, we're going to see next week, Naomi is going to try some shady shenanigans. And we're going to see how upright this man is. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we're thankful again that we're able to look into your word, not just to grow in our intellect, but for you and your grace to build the bridge from our mind to our hearts, that we may walk in loving obedience as we leave and as we go about our day and this week. Again, remind us of this special time of the season, of the incarnation of the second blessed member of the Trinity, choosing to enter time and space and become a man, not to die for the righteous, but to die for sinners. And so help that to be our focus. Use us as well where you've placed us to be salt and light, and we'll give you the glory in Jesus' name. Amen.